Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. Author Diane Ackerman will read from and discuss her 2007 bestseller, The Zookeeper's Wife, in anticipation of the new motion picture based on her book. The event happens at 8 o'clock Tuesday night at the New York State Museum in Albany. Earlier that day, at 4:15, she'll be holding a seminar on the UAlbany Uptown campus as part of the New York State Writers Institute. Diane Ackerman is a naturalist and writer of both prose and poetry. The Zookeeper's Wife has been adapted for film by Focus Features and is scheduled for release March 31st. The book and film tell the little-known true story of a Warsaw zookeeper's family that saved 300 Jews during the Holocaust. It is a great pleasure to welcome Diane Ackerman to the Roundtable this morning. Diane, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
I'm delighted to join you.
So nice to have you. You and I, we had a lovely discussion. You were a guest at SUNY Ulster, and we sat down and we talked for 2 hours, and it was one of the most memorable interviews I've ever had. You were just a delight. We were talking about this project, and one of the things that came up was that this movie was starting its process. Well, now it's done. The movie is out on the 31st, and what do you think?
Well, you know, it's taken 8 years to actually put all the different pieces together and bring it out. And I'm so glad that the producer stuck with it because I was on the set for 4 days in Prague when they were filming, and I just thought they did a beautiful, beautiful job of it.
The movie comes out.
Also, interestingly, Antonina's daughter came to the set as well. She's a woman in her late 70s, and they dressed her up in the clothes of the era, and she's an extra in one of the scenes.
Tell us what brought you to the story initially, of how you came to the story.
Well, I first got interested through the animals. My grandparents came from Poland. They told me that there was gorgeous countryside. And I learned that there were very ancient-looking horses running around in one of the forests. And I'd always been a horse girl. I wanted to find out a little bit more. But when I tried to get in touch with this fairy tale forest in Poland, I discovered I needed to have somebody who could speak the language to help me even to email. I asked a neighbor, and she said, you know, coincidentally, one of my uncles was a vet at the zoo before the war. And we got in touch with him. He told us that he remembered that the zookeeper's wife kept a diary. And we asked him to find it for us. He sent it. And the moment it was translated, I realized that this was not a simple story. And the zookeepers were not just taking in orphan animals from this forest. They were also taking in refugees throughout the war.
Right. In looking at the overall story, how I don't want to say easy, that's certainly not the word for it, but how good was the record keeping and being able to the records that were kept of being able to find out the truth of what happened and for even those who were involved that you were still able to talk to?
Well, it certainly took a lot of nosing around, but, you know, you can find what you're looking for. And I was writing not a novel. It reads like a novel,
right,
called narrative nonfiction, but I wasn't allowed to make anything up. So that meant that I really had to find what everybody was saying in the different confrontations and so on. And you can find these things. I had things translated for me from Polish and Yiddish and Hebrew and Russian and German. And there are some documents. I was able, when I was in Poland, to turn up a lot of information. But then the actual setting, that's something that you can see in person, but you can also research it very successfully from the States. I mean, if you want to find out what the zookeeper's wife saw when she looked up You can discover what the navigation patterns of birds were over Warsaw in 1939, and you can find out what different animals lived in the zoo and what scent they gave off and what sounds they made. And it was possible to fill in the textures of everyday life. And the more that I did that, the closer I felt to Antonina. But the real reason that I wanted to write about her was that she was a heroine in a special way that I think happens all the time on our planet, but we just don't hear about it very much. Her husband, Jan, was the head of an underground unit, and so he was heroic in a traditional sense, but she was a different kind of hero. She decided that it was not going to be enough for these people who were hiding out at the zoo to just survive the war. She wanted to make sure that they would survive with their humanity intact. Otherwise, they would be so traumatized, they would have no life.
Right.
And so after dinner every evening, she brought them out. There was a pianist hiding among them who did concerts. There was a sculptress. She had a lot of orphan animals, baby animals, running around the house. So there was the innocent distraction of these animals. She did what we would think of today as therapy, really, with the people. And she helped them thrive. And all but, I think, two of them survived the war. Those two died of illness. And it's just a remarkable story of good coming out of evil.
You spoke at the beginning of our conversation about how what led you to this ultimately was the animals, which really gets into your larger body of work. What is it that fascinated you about the animals and the importance of telling that aspect of the story?
Well, the one of the aspects of the story that I found irresistible is Antonina had really an almost mystical relationship with animals. She was an orphan herself. Her parents had been murdered in the early days of the Russian Revolution. And as people in her situation do, she grew up really having to pay attention to the motives of the people around her because her life was precarious. And then when she fell in love and married the zookeeper, she kept that insight into people's behavior, and she also was able to read how animals responded too. There was no difference for her between human animals and the other animals we call animals. And she was able to apply a lot of that understanding to how she dealt with the Nazis as well. But it was partly her love of animals, and it was partly her incredible empathy, her radical acts of compassion.
What I think is striking in reading the book is that many of the overall concerns, of course, about the animals we still have today, and a lot of that hasn't gone away, and how relevant so many aspects of this story are to today.
Yes. As for the animals, well, the only reason that forest, Bialylovyezhia, now continues to exist, and I might add it's the only fragment of primeval forest left in all of Europe. It's where the fairy tales come from. But the only reason it exists is that Hitler had decided that after the war he would need pure Aryan horses to ride, pure Aryan animals to hunt, and of course a primeval forest. And so they protected the forest. And they protected the zoo because the zookeepers happened to be expert at raising some of these rare animals. So that made it possible to hide the refugees. But as for endangered animals, very much on our minds today. And as for the plight of refugees, well, that couldn't be more relevant either. And the anti-Semitism that was going on there, we see echoes of it in our country today. So unfortunately, in terms of history, these are things that are still going on, genocide, for example, racism, and there still are people of strong conviction who are putting their lives on the line to do what is right. The people who were called rescuers during World War II, and Antonin and Jan are rescuers, they all said exactly the same thing when you read their testimonies. They said that they didn't do anything special, that they did what anybody in their situation would have done because it was the right thing to do. It was the moral thing to do. They were so-called ordinary people, but they could rise to heroic actions to protect their neighbors.
Before you joined us on today's program, we've been talking a lot about the EPA. We've been talking a lot about climate change, and I'm just curious as to your overall thoughts of there was that imperative, that moral imperative, that quite frankly we seem to be losing at the moment. And I'm curious as to your thoughts on that, and ultimately, if there is something that we can look at with some degree of optimism.
Well, I'm as concerned as you are. On the same day that Trump decided pretty much to put in charge of the EPA someone who wanted to do away with it, he also, and the same day that he had, said at his talk to Congress that he was in favor of clean water, clean air, he was doing things that would allow the coal industry to pollute our rivers and streams, which is not what we need. I was in Ohio a few years ago, and the rivers were chunky. They could catch fire. Mm. How polluted does water have to be that it can catch fire? So these are things that could not be more important to us, and I'm very concerned about it. However, I am heartened by all of the activism that is taking place. I've been calling my representatives every day. I know that Michael Moore is out there encouraging people to call and let it be known how we feel about things. I'm attending town hall meetings. And I think this is a time more than ever when we have to make it known that we require a clean environment and as much complexity of life forms on the planet as possible, not just because it's our moral responsibility, but so that we can be healthy, so that we can be healthy spiritually, and so that we can be healthy physically, and that our offspring can as well. I'm very heartened by how many people all over the planet are taking this seriously and working hard to make changes. We're very attuned to what's going on in our own country, but if you go to the UN Climate Heroes site, for example, mm-hmm. online, you will find stories of individuals all over the planet who are making a difference.
Diane Ackerman will read from and discuss her bestseller, The Zookeeper's Wife, which has been made into a film starring Jessica Chastain. They'll actually be showing a trailer for the film on the event on Tuesday night. Diane Ackerman will be speaking to Paul Grondahl, our good buddy, who is the newly named director of the Writers Institute. It'll be taking place 8 o'clock on Tuesday night at the New York State Museum Library. Excuse me, the New York State Museum in Albany. Earlier that day at 4:15, there will be a seminar in the UAlbany Uptown campus. And, of course, The Zookeeper's Wife is available as well. Diane Ackerman, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Always a thrill to talk to you, and I thank you very much for sharing with us.
Oh, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.